This is the second, the third tape, taken on March the 23rd with Mr. F.T. Liu by Sutherland.
Mr. Liu, to continue now, in January 1961, you were back in the Congo, is that correct, with the Conciliation Commission?
That's right. In fact, at that time, our objective was to see Lumumba and find a way to have him liberated.
Because you didn't know exactly where he was at that point?
Well, we knew at the beginning that he was in the Tisville army camp. We knew that. In fact, in our many meetings with President Kasavubu, we wanted Kasavubu to arrange for a meeting between Lumumba and the Conciliation Commission, either in Leopoldville or at the Tisville camp.
I see. Now, at this point, given the situation with Lumumba, a number of countries had threatened to withdraw their forces. Is that correct?
Yes, and they did it mainly after the death of Lumumba.
And did this seriously weaken the United Nations operation?
Well, at the beginning it did, because the strength of the force was brought down dramatically. But Hammarskjöld got new troops, mainly from India.
Financial problems began about the same time also, is that correct?
That's right, yes.
So that on the whole it was a discouraging time in terms of the operation?
Yes, it is a very discouraging time because immediately after Lumumba, when our force was brought down dramatically, the situation in the Congo got worse. In fact, there was a very real danger of a flare-up of the civil war between the four de facto governments that existed in the Congo. So much so that the Security Council passed a resolution in which, for the first time, authorized the UN force to use force in order to prevent civil war.
Could you describe a bit the function of the Conciliation Commission as it was deployed in the Congo?
Well, the Conciliation Commission has as mandate to see all the leaders of the Congo, including Katanga, naturally, and to facilitate their reconciliation, with as aim the establishment of a national reconciliation and national unity government.
And this is why you were interested in trying to see Mr. Lumumba at this point.
Yes, we have always thought that in order to achieve the conciliation among the Congolese leaders, we must achieve the conciliation between the two main leaders of the time, that is Kasavubu and Lumumba. In order to achieve that conciliation, we must get Lumumba liberated.
But this failed. You were unable to see Lumumba.
We were unable. Kasavubu hedged, gave all kind of pretext every time we saw him. And finally we learned first that he was transferred to Katanga, and later on that he died there.
There's one thing I want to be clear about. When the commission arrived, it was known that Lumumba was at Tisville camp, right?
That's right.
And were there UN forces there or not?
Nearby, but not too near the camp, you see.
So they were not in the immediate vicinity of Lumumba?
No. You know, we had at the peak about 20,000 soldiers. And that's not too many soldiers for a big country like the Congo. So our deployment was rather thin.
But so that, just to return a moment, while Lumumba was still in Leopoldville, he was afforded some protection by the UN forces.
That's right. We sent two military units, one to protect the residents of Lumumba and the other to protect the residents of Kasavubu.
But in Tisdenville, this was not the case. He was not receiving UN protection at that point.
No, he was a prisoner. He was a detainee. We have some soldiers nearby, but we couldn't protect him. No, we have no control. We have no access to him.
So there was really nothing you could do, that is nothing that the UN forces could do when he was taken from there to Elizabeth?
No. What the UN could do and what the UN did was to try to get Lumumba protected and later on, if possible, liberated through negotiations. And you have three series of negotiations going on. Hammarskjöld at headquarters was negotiating with the delegations. The special representative of the Secretary General, Ambassador Dayal, was negotiating with Kasavubu and Mobutu. And the Conciliation Commission had a third set of negotiations, also with Kasavubu and Mobutu, mainly in Leopoldville at that time.
Meanwhile, in New York, the situation had become more critical because of the increasingly hostile attitude of the Soviet Union toward the Secretary General.
That's right. And immediately after the death of Lumumba, the Soviet Union demanded the dismissal of Hammarskjöld and refused to have any dealings with the Secretary General.
Could you describe then the situation as you perceived it at that point on the spot in the Congo?
Well, at that time, there was a real danger of a flare-up of the civil war. And therefore, and in fact, there were quite a lot of fighting here and there. So the UN policy was to prevent the civil war. And this time, there was a resolution of the Security Council authorizing it to use force. Naturally, still, authorization or no authorization, we must be very careful because you can use force really if you have enough force to use. And you have always to be careful once you use force. You never know. You know how to start, but you never know how to stop.
Now, it was at this point, I believe, that Dag Hammarskjöld decided to make some changes in his immediate staff, both in New York and also in the Congo, partly because of criticism of the over-representation of Americans. Can you say anything about this? I believe that the new person that was assigned in the Congo was Mr. Chiari, and in New York, Mr. Cartier's job was changed. What was the atmosphere at this point? How was this interpreted by you and by others dealing with the Congo?
Well, first at headquarters, Hammarskjöld did decide to remove Cartier from his cabinet. So Cartier was given the new function of Under Secretary for General Assembly Affairs. Cordier had been dealing with the Assembly, General Assembly anyway, for a long time, so that was really not a new function for him. And but he left the cabinet in order to concentrate on the General Assembly Affairs. The post of chef de cabinet was given to Narasimhan, an Indian. That was the change. Bunch remained the same. Dag Hammarskjöld would not change Bunch for any reasons. Now, in the Congo, the special representative was still Dayal, Ambassador Dayal. But Dayal has expressed a desire to withdraw, to retire, because he said that he couldn't no longer carry out his functions because of the bad relationship between him and Kasavubu. So later on, Dag Hammarskjöld appointed, I think, Mickey Abbas as a special representative. And when Mickey Abbas left, at his request, the post was given to Linnaeus, but with a new title. Instead of special representative, he was his title was officer in charge of the Congo. I believe that this was done because Hammarskjöld wants to lower the responsibility of the post. Then, when Linnaeus was switched from chief of civilian operations to the post of officer in charge, Chiari was appointed as chief of civilian operations. Therefore, the number two to Linnaeus.
And at this point now, just to bring your personal participation into perspective, did you return to New York or did you stay in the Congo?
No, I returned to New York with the Conciliation Commission. And then I stayed in Banchu's office. I was officially transferred to his office in the meanwhile. I stayed in that office and dealt with the Congo operations from New York.
I wanted to ask you in this connection then, with the changes in the Congo and in New York to a certain extent, was the same close liaison and communication maintained as had been the case earlier, or was there less satisfactory communication between Leopoldville and headquarters in New York?
Well, I think the relationship in theory was the same. We were dealing with the Congo from New York in the same way, but of course the personality of the chief of mission is important. And certainly there is less close relationship between Linnaeus and the Secretary General than between Bunch or Dayal with the Secretary General.
Would you say then that a point was arriving where the Secretary General did not have the close rapport, one might say, with the UN representatives in Leopoldville and also in Katanga, because this was the point where Mr. Cruz O'Brien was designated for the Katanga, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. But again, it's not a question of posts, it's rather a question of persons. I think Linnaeus and Colonel Cruz O'Brien were not the right person for the job, so therefore there were some problems, difficulties.
Do you think this affected the UN operation in the Congo?
I think, yes, it did affect the operation, and in fact it caused the death of Hammarskjöld. There was, at that time, a very deep misunderstanding. And I think this misunderstanding, which led to the fighting in Katanga in September 1961, which led the Secretary General to agree to see Tshombe. He would not have seen Tshombe otherwise, but he saw that there was a misunderstanding which has to be clarified, and he's willing to take the extraordinary step of seeing Tshombe in the Dola, that is outside the territory of the Congo, because of this misunderstanding and because he thought that the fighting had to be stopped anyhow.
Now, were you with the Secretary General at that point in the Congo?
No. I was at headquarters.
You were headquarters.
And when the Secretary General decided to go to the Congo to resolve the problem, he took Vishoff with him, Hans Vishoff, who was his advisor for African affairs. And Bunch and I remain at headquarters.
So you were but in fairly close contact. You remain in close contact with the Secretary General as he reached Leopoldville, because he was reporting back, I believe.
Oh, yes, yes. We were in constant contact, a very close contact. And in fact, just before arriving in Leopoldville, he sent a cable to Bunch in which he expressed sadness on what happened in the Congo. And we had the impression that he learned at that time that something went wrong in the Congo, that his instructions had not been carried out. In fact, that he had been betrayed by the leadership of ONUC in the Congo. That was an impression. He never said that. But Bunch told me that that cable was very strange. He was a bit bitter. And he said he was going rushing to Leopoldville in order to go deeper into this problem. I believe what happens is, the fighting which started in August 1961 was started by the UN, in fact. Kiari went to Elizabethville with some warrant for the arrest of the Congolese leaders. We never knew that.
With the Katangi's
leader. With the Katangi's leader. We never knew that. But Kiari had that from the Congo government, warrant arrest. Therefore, he went there determined to use force. And then fighting started. As you know, Colonel Cruz O'Brien wrote a book later on. And in his book, he thought that Dag Hammarskjöld had ordered the use of force, which led to the start of this new round of fighting. And he tried to carry out that mandate. And then after the fighting, when Dag Hammarskjöld denied that he had given such order, Colonel Cruz believed that he was betrayed. He thought that Dag Hammarskjöld changed his mind because of the event in the Katanga. But Dag Hammarskjöld, I'm quite sure, never changed his mind, because he never gave this order. That order was given by Linné, or rather by Kiari acting on behalf of Linné.
But it is your impression that Conor Cruz O'Brien felt that the order had been given by somebody.
Yes, he was convinced that the Dag Hammarskjöld himself gave the order and changed the policy after the fighting went the wrong way.
Now, you and Bunch in New York, what was your impression from that distance of New York of the steps that Conor Cruz O'Brien was taking in Katanga? I assume there was fairly continuous reporting from Elizabethville.
Yes, well, Hammarskjöld was appalled by what happened. That's why he decided to go to the Congo to look into the matter. And as I said, I believe that on the way, even before he reached Leopoldville, he received some information which led him to believe that the UN was at fault, that some mandate was given without his authorization. That is my distinct impression.
And then the next event really was the death of Hammarskjöld.
That's right. When he arrived in Leopoldville, he decided to meet with Tshombe in Dola in order to discuss these problems and arrange for a ceasefire. And as you know, his plane crashed just before he arrived in this Dola.
Now, I want to stop at this point to ask you some rather general questions, Mr. Liu, about your conclusions, if I can put it that way, relative to the overall UN operation in the Congo and its ultimate results. There were, of course, after the death of Hameshoff, there were further disturbances, and it was a while before the Katanga secession ceased. But one can say, I think, that this was, in fact, a turning point, and after that, it came to a climax and to a denouement in the Congo. How would you assess the whole operation, since you were so close to it from the beginning until the end?
Well, the UN operation in the Congo, UNUC, was certainly the largest, the most difficult, the most controversial operation in UN history. But I believe that in the end it was a great success. Now, we have to remember that at the beginning, when the crisis started, the Congo was in a terrible state. It was total chaos. The country was had collapsed. And if nothing was done, there would be a power vacuum, which could very well lead to a major world crisis involving the direct intervention of the two superpowers. So the situation was extremely serious. We went there. We had many problems, including the death of Lumumba and the death of the Secretary General. But in the end, we achieved the main purposes. The Belgium troops were withdrawn. The mercenaries were withdrawn. When the UN left the Congo in June 1964, there was a national reconciliation of all Congolese leaders. The national unity government was set up in Leopoldville, the capital. The secession had ended without a bloodbath. The essential services have been maintained. And perhaps most important of all, we have avoided a direct military confrontation between the two superpowers on the problem of the Congo. So it was a great success. But the operation was criticized. And I think the main traumatic event was the death of Lumumba. To this day, some Africans still blame the UN for the death of Lumumba. And the Soviet Union, as you know, broke its relations completely with the Secretary General.
Right.
But I think the criticisms leveled against the UN, against Dag Hammarskjöld, were unfair. Because when the constitutional crisis broke out, we did everything possible to protect Lumumba. We sent there a unit especially to protect him. And when he left on his own will. He wanted to go. We could not stop him. He was not our prisoners. And he was caught. After he was caught, Dag Hammarskjöld did everything possible, made every effort to first to ensure that he be treated humanely, and secondly, to try to secure his release. We couldn't do it because mainly of the negative attitude of Kasavubu and Mobutu. We did everything possible, short, of course, of using force.
What would you say the weaknesses were on the side of the United Nations? The weaknesses which perhaps have some lessons in them for the future.
Yeah. Well, I believe that the UN was not ready at that time for an operation as involved, as complex as the Congo. See, 20,000 troops, that is the largest force ever in UN history, was not enough to maintain law and order. And the main problem which the UN couldn't remedy was the lack of preparation for the independence of the Congo. The Congo was not ready for independence. There was not enough administrators, military officers, engineers, doctors. At the time of independence, there were only 17 university graduates for the whole of the Congo.
Let me go to the military side just a moment. You say there were, of course, 20,000 troops, which is a very large force, certainly for the United Nations. In some cases, the troops were not well disciplined, I believe, or at least did not know exactly how troops should conduct themselves under these circumstances. My question is, would it have been helpful if these troops had had some advanced training?
Oh, certainly.
What we call peacekeeping.
Certainly, you're absolutely right. I believe, in fact, the training of UN troops is a major question even now. I believe a UN force could be more efficient if the troops were better trained. There is also the question of logistics. See, we didn't have enough logistic facilities. So all these things could be remedied in time. And I believe in the UN now, some thought is given to the necessity of training troops, of having earmarked troops, and having, of course, adequate logistic and financial support.
Now, if I may, I would like to go back for a minute because there's one area that we have left uncovered, I think, which is of interest. In addition to Katanga, there was for a while a separate administration in Stanleyville, where Mr. Gizenga was. But that was not considered a secession, I believe. Why? Can you comment on this? How was that quasi-government looked on by the United Nations?
Well, Gizenga's government is a de facto government based in Stanleyville. They want to be the government of the whole of the Congo, not taking the Oriental province, secede from the Congo.
So it was an alternate government, in other words.
It is alternate government. It is a civilian struggle. They were fighting for the political power with the de facto government in Leopoldville and in Kasai. It's not a formal secession. In Kasai is half-half, but they never declared official secession. That is taking a part of the territory out of the national territory of the Congo.
And how did the United Nations representatives deal with the Gizenga regime in Stanleyville, if at all, or did you have no contact with them?
No, we have some contact because we have some troops there. And also during this various series of conciliation efforts, we, of course, tried to get all the leaders together.
But you did not recognize, at that point, I suppose there was actually no constitutional government to recognize.
That's right. Yes, from the 5th of September on, there were no constitutional governments. There were four de facto governments. The aim of the UN is to facilitate the national reconciliation of the leaders and the establishment of a national unity government. And that has to be done with the reopening of the parliament. And that objective was achieved in October 61. In October 61, all the leaders agreed to meet in a reopened parliament under UN protection. We got all the leaders, but except Katanga. The Katanga leaders at the last moment refused to come. So we have the parliament reopened with all the leaders, all the representatives, except the Katangese. They unanimously approved a new government headed by Prime Minister Adjoula. With this, we consider the constitutional crisis as settled. From then on, the aim of the UN was to end the secession of Katanga through negotiations and through the elimination of foreign influence. And this led to a series of fighting and finally to an agreement by Chombe to come back.
Now that leads me to the second question I wanted to catch up on. Mr. Adula was named the Prime Minister at that point, and I know that there was major contact between the United Nations representatives and Adula. What was the relationship with Mr. Mobutu at this point, though, because he was still very much in the picture, if I'm not mistaken?
Yes, but he's very much in the picture, but officially he's the head of the Congolese army. And as a head of the Congolese army, of course, he's under Adula's control. The control was very loose, but we didn't go into that.
Right.
But anyway, after the establishment, the election of the Adula government, our position was quite simple. We deal with Adula.
And only with Mobutu on military matters?
Yes.
If at all?
If at all.
I see. And that posed no problem?
No. At that time, it was Adula, you see.
Right. And did that last then throughout the whole period of the UN of ONUC, that is until 1964? The dealings were with Adula and not with Mobutu?
That's right. In fact, it was Adula who encouraged us to take those various actions in Katanga.
Right.
And I said at one point, that is in August 61, Kiari exceeded the mandate given by the Secretary General, since he accepted from Adula some warrant for arrest of Katangese leaders.
Was there a sense that Mobutu was already actually in control, or was?
No, I don't think so. I think so long as Adula was prime minister, he was fairly in fairly firm control of Mobutu. Mobutu was under him. There was no problem.
So that in fact then this was a period of consolidation, and it was a real consolidation of governmental power in the Congo, which...
Yes. In fact, immediately after the establishment of the Adula government, Houtan, then the Secretary General, sent a letter which promised all help from the UN to go through Adula.
Now, I said the last question, but one more question, because you mentioned that, of course, Mr. Houtan had become the Secretary General. And the rest of the Congo story was during his tenure as Secretary General. Was the communication, was the rapport close between Houtan and the representatives in the field in the Congo?
Oh yes, quite close. There was no problem.
Houtan, in effect, was following through the same policy that Doc Hammarskjöld had sought to follow.
Yes, I think so. I have no doubt about it. It was Doc Hammarskjöld's policy. He was just following it and carrying it through.
So there was no, what I would say, there was no real break then in terms of the United Nations policy and the United Nations implementation of policy with the change from Hammarskjöld to Houtan.
Well, that's my third belief. And I believe that if Hammarskjöld had left, he would have done exactly the same thing. That is, try to resolve the secession of Katanga through negotiations and conciliation.
And Ralph Bunche remained an important figure in New York during this period also.
Absolutely.
So that Houtan was relying on Ralph Bunche very much the way that Hammarskjöld did.
Oh yes, absolutely. Policy in the Congo was directed by Ralph Bunche.
Right. And you continued to be with Ralph Bunche?
Yes.
So you were able to observe the relationship between Houtan and Ralph Bunche?
Oh yes, it was a very close relationship.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Okay. We have some sandwiches and...